Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to be talking with USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist Dan Weber about this Trojan football team. A lot of questions you guys have sent in about the team, what happened at Oregon, the future of the program. So we're going to get to all of those. Send us any questions you have. Podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address, or you can leave us a voicemail, 641-715-3900, extension 816-646, or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page. You can leave a voicemail right there. Whatever you do, send in a question. Try to keep them brief. We can't play voicemails that are over a minute long. I had to delete a bunch of those this week already, so sorry about that. And if they're really long questions, it's just not going to be able to read them all. So try to keep them concise. Keep your questions on point, and we will do our best to get to each and every one of them. Of course, you can go to iTunes.com as well if you want to subscribe to the podcast. iTunes.com/Peristyle Podcast. A lot of different ways to get a hold of us, and we do really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. Let's bring in Dan Weber. What's up, Dan? How are you?
Oh, doing good. Doing good. Glad to be back home and in the warm weather. That's always a nice thing. After two cold weather games, we'll see how that impacts anything this week. But we'll take it for starters.
Yeah. Dan and I were both up there in the frigid Eugene open-air press box, which it was a little bit strange, I thought. But yeah, so we're going to get to all the questions. We'll talk about what we saw up there in Oregon. I wanted to thank our sponsor, Michael Moline Real Estate. So if you're here in Southern California somewhere and you're looking to buy or sell, definitely check him out. He's a true Trojan fan. We'll see him Saturday in the press box for the last time doing stats, at least last time this year for the USC-UCLA game. So he's all over the USC program, michaelmolinerealestate.com. Or you can give him a call at 310-275-4688, and we'll have a little message from him at the end of the show as well. And, yeah, Dan, you know, we're back, from Oregon. We got a lot of questions. I don't know. I'll give you an option. You can have a little opening rant, or we can go and jump in the questions, whatever you'd like.
Well, I just think, look back at the Oregon game. It probably bothers me a little bit that they seemed surprised that they weren't ready to play and that they weren't ready to play full speed. They weren't ready to execute. I mean, this has been kind of, you know, I said that they're on a kind of a downward glide path, even though they were able to, you know, hang in there and win those four straight. You know, they obviously got off to the great start with Utah, but since then it's just been kind of not ready to go, not ready to execute, not sure what exactly they wanted to do. Seemed like, you know, other teams kind of had a better sense of what they wanted to do. And that was the most disappointing thing, I think, about Oregon, was the kind of inability on both sides of the ball to have an identity, to have a sense of, you know, this is what we have to do to win this football game. And that was disappointing, I think. I know, you know, a lot of injuries. I know a lot of teams got injuries, but, you know, I guess one of the things that surprised me was on the field after the game, you realize, you know, you're standing there next to Vernon Adams and all the UK players, you know, who knew him in high school or played with him in high school or whatever, all wanted to be out there and get their pictures taken with him. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this guy's playing quarterback. Big time quarterback. He's not any taller than I am. I'm thinking, why weren't there more people, more times, trying to get into throwing lanes? And they did it some the second half. Where you know, you're going to block his vision and give him different looks every time down so that he doesn't really get a chance to get real comfortable. And it kind of worked, actually. And that's kind of been the way to go after him. And I just didn't see that, like, you know, from the beginning where he's always got very easy looks. And once he broke, you know, would break contain or whatever. Now, yeah, you can complain, as I probably did and everybody else was, that there may have been a little holding going on at the edge. And, you know, when you see USC defensive linemen not able to break away from the guy blocking them, you know, think, it's probably not all really, really that kind of good body. And it looks like there was some, you know, some grabbing and holding, but I still just think I didn't see a smart, well-executed game plan that would really work in that game. And that's what, you know, that's what you need. Oregon, it looked to me like they knew exactly what they wanted to do, how they wanted to take advantage, and USC didn't. And that's a shame. And I need to, you know, at this time of the year, when, you know, you're basically playing, you know, they got a break finally. You know, they lost the game. They thought they had to win every single game, and they lost the game, and Utah loses, and now, you know, their fate's in their own hands. But, you know, you just got to keep playing better, and we're not seeing that. So that's sort of a mini rant.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good opener. All right, let's go to – so we're going to have some coaching questions. We'll probably save those for the end, and we'll do, like, team questions first. This is a top Trojan fan. He says, now that this Wilcox defense has proven itself to be a complete failure by giving up more touchdowns than any USC defense in history, including the Monty Kiffin Tampa 2, which we all remember for being terrible, who would you like to see as our new defensive coordinator? Oh, I guess this is a coaching question, my bad. Our new defensive coordinator next year. I know it depends on who the head coach is, but if it was up to you, who would you choose? Quote, I mean, it's hashtag fire Wilcox from top Trojan fan.
Honestly, I mean, we've had a lot of things in terms of the, you know, the coaching search where we're way out ahead of our skis or whatever you want to say. But, to try to pick a, you know, a coordinator, before you get the head coach, I'm sorry. You just can't do,
yeah,
do that. I mean, it's just, it's beyond unreasonable. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. But I was looking at the Pac-12, standings and, you will be surprised, probably, to know that USC, through last weekend, was a number three in scoring defense, number three in rushing defense, number four in total defense in the Pac-12, number seven in pass defense. And we haven't seen the stats yet this week, so that obviously dropped out. But actually, they, you know, their defensive performance hasn't been that bad, which is why I think it bothers people that they could have been a lot better. And I know people still want to get down on the defensive line, but I think if they were active in, you know, against Oregon, they could have, you know, they just had opportunities that they didn't seem to be willing to take. See, I think there was one more stat that people would be, I think, shocked about. Let's see. Yeah, sacks, and I'm trying to find them.
While you're looking for that, I'll just say one thing. I forgot to mention his PS. He says, I'm writing this from Qatar, where I'm deployed on my seventh deployment. I listen to all of your podcasts and love the show. So I know you'd like to hear from someone who's international. Definitely international. Love. Thank you for your service, and awesome that you're listening in Qatar.
That's wonderful. Oh, man. And, of course, we're never going to know how to pronounce it. I've seen it, you know, I've heard it on CNN.
Oh, Qatar.
They'll say it one way, Qatar, and they'll say Qatar, and I always like Qatar better. But,
okay, that's what I was saying. And, Dan, I think I know what...
Let's see another stat. Pass, defense efficiency. No, boom, 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 boom. Where am I going here? No, boom, boom, boom. Boom. Now, that one, they're not so good. Kickoff returns. Trying to look at where kickoff coverage, if we count that as their number one, but I can't find sacks. It seemed like, yeah, I think they're leading the league in sacks. But they're tied with Arizona State. But that's amazing that USC, their defensive stats are better than when you see a game like Saturday and you think, gosh, are they doing anything right on defense? And yet, statistically, it hasn't been that bad and probably could have been a good bit better.
I got the stats. It looks like Arizona State's first.
Arizona State is first.
They have 44. Oregon has 34, and then USC has 33. So I have them as third.
Oh, so that was – okay, so they dropped to third after last weekend. Okay.
Yeah.
Oregon moved up after the USC game, unfortunately, yeah, for USC.
Well, here's a okay. So that's a good segue though into our next question, because you want to talk about stats, and I know you brought this up on the conference call. So let me, I can pull the exact stats up, but Matt has a question. He says, hoping to get your Dan's view on the penalty discrepancy for USC and UCLA versus the rest of the Pac-12 teams. This is my recollection. It's not just a quote unquote this year thing, but every year. I saw someone try to get Clay to comment on the Sunday call and he avoided it. It can't be that the LA schools are always the most undisciplined. Hate to be a conspiracy theory oriented, but something stinks. Thanks for all the coverage this odd year from Matt.
Yeah, something does stink. And I think the way you figure that out is not so much you could be undisciplined. I think without a doubt, USC has been relatively undisciplined over the last few years. And, you know, with the transitions and, you know, when you've got five coaches in 5 years and all that kind of thing, you know, stuff like that's going to happen. When you're probably, you know, forced to do things you don't want to do and all that. So you might have more penalties. And UCLA, I think we could all agree, is, you know, their reputation is they're going to hit you. They're going to hit you if you're on the ground, lying on your back, whatever. They're going to hit you and hopefully get away with it. So, okay, they'd be probably candidates to be down at the bottom in penalties. What doesn't figure is how are both teams' opponents, when you add them all up, every game, are also USC's opponents are the least penalized in the league. UCLA's are the second least penalized. So USC and UCLA have no control over that.
Right.
You know, that has nothing. The only people who have control over that are the officials. And what that tells you, and that's where Pete went after him after he'd been here about a year, and he realized, not only were they getting screwed, but the people they were playing were never called for anything. And I was at the meeting with Dave Kataya, who does some commentary now, I think, on, but he was the head of the officials. And Pete said, explain this for me. The people we play are the least penalized teams in the league. How is that possible? Kataya went, blah, 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 blah. He had no answer. Everybody knows the answer. They swallow their flags and their whistles or whatever you want to say when it's USC and somebody else. It's undeniable. There's no other explanation for the fact that USC and UCLA, that USC's opponents are the least penalized in the league. It's always been that way. It's going to keep being that way unless somebody does something about it. And obviously nobody cares enough at the Pac-12 to, you know, say, we can't have this. But they, you know, if you're playing USC, you're probably going to have a pretty good day in terms of penalties, because they're not going to call a lot of them on you. And that, you know, and people could say, well, that used to be USC was so much better than the rest of these teams. They just did it because they felt sorry for them. Or the fact that you've got as many officials from Oregon as you do, you know, California. So you've got a, you know, like a 30 times better chance of being a Pac-12 official if you come from Oregon than you do if you come from California. You know, it's just natural, I guess. You know, they just want to make it, you know, so it would be like, it would have been like piling on, I guess, if they would have called every game in the Pete Carroll era fairly, it would have been, looked like piling on, because, you know, that just wouldn't have been right in their mind. But that it continues to this day, it's, you know, there's no other explanation for that, that USC's opponents are the least penalized teams in the league. There's just no excuse, and there's no explanation other than they, you know, they just swallow their whistle, hold on to their flag.
So through 11 games, USC's had 53 penalties called against them. That's actually 9 fewer than number, you know, than the next team. So 497 total yards, 4.8 penalties per game for opponent, 45.2 yards per game. So UCLA second from the bottom in that.
Right.
They have a full penalty more. So USC's opponents are a full penalty, fewer than the number 11 team, and they're in USC's number 12. And it's kind of crazy. Oregon State are 3 and 4, so that could lend some credence to your, there's a lot of officials from Oregon theory, but it's not, okay, so this was going on during the peak era, but it's actually not, USC's not been at the bottom every year. So I have each year going back to 2008. So USC's 12 right now after 11 games. In 2014, USC was actually 7, and Utah was the most penalized. So last year, it was a little bit different. UCLA was still number 11 last year.
You're talking about most penalized team, not opponents.
No, this
right?
is opponent. I'm sorry. This is opponent penalized. So
penalty. Okay. Yeah, so that moves up and down.
So USC's middle of the road 2014. They're number 8 in 2013. Actually up to number 4. So that 2012, not bad. This is the Lane Kiffin stuff. Number 7 in 2011. They were worst in 2010, number 10. Well, this was one of the Pac-10. Number 9 in 2000 out of 10 in 2009, and number 9 in 2009 and 2008. So like, yeah, I think the Pete Carroll era, like you're seeing, even at the end when it wasn't as good, USC was always at the bottom. But the last few years, it's not always been that way. But this year, it's by a, you know, by a pretty good margin that USC opponents are the least penalized in the league.
Yeah, and there is no explanation that should never be consistent, that a team's opponents should, you know, it just shouldn't be consistent. That's basically luck of the draw. And if there's a consistency there, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And if USC's back to being at the bottom of the barrel, you know, there's no, because, I mean, it's not like, USC is, you know, playing slow or fewer plays or, you know, there's no mathematical way that you could probably explain that.
Right.
Other than they're just not calling penalties on the people USC's playing.
If anything, you look at the athletes.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. USC has more athletes, especially during the Pete Keller era, you know, Pete Keller era. Like, you would try to do a little bit more. But it was almost like Shaq, when you wouldn't call penalties on Shaq because he was so big. I mean, a foul's, you know, on anyone like Shaq was guarding or, you know, someone, you know, you couldn't do it. Shaq was too big, so he wouldn't get the benefit of the doubt all the time. You almost feel like it's the same sort of thing.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, when you're playing people that are, you know, less talented and happen to do things just to stay in the game, they ought to be getting more penalties.
Yeah.
Not less.
No, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so it does not pass the smell test in terms of, oh yeah, there's an explanation. No, there's not. Yeah. Other than one, there's only one, you know. And as USC was, you know, finishing up the sanctions and all that, they were playing fewer plays. I mean, I think what would explain the first few years there is the fact that USC slowed the games down. They tried to play, you know, fewer plays. They didn't have as many players. So I think they, you know, purposely tried to slow the game down, had fewer plays, therefore you'd have fewer penalties. So your opponent, you know, would have fewer penalties. But, you know, they're not doing that anymore. So, yeah. Oh, well. But I think you're right. They're any perception of that they're probably leaning in one direction would probably be true.
Mark in La Quinta says, it appears that the USC offensive line, the linemen were complaining about the Oregon defense clapping hands and otherwise interfering with the snap count. Did anyone ask about it?
They did, yes. Coach Conley talked about it. They, you know, USC is very hesitant to criticize the officials, but we did ask him, and he said, yes, they were clapping. And we said, is that legal? He said, probably not, especially if you're, you know, using sound to, you know, on your offensive signals. So they said no question that Oregon was using, you know, hand claps and kind of replicating what USC was, you know, with Cody, what they were doing. And nobody, not a single call, nothing, not any. USC, I think the only time I remember that, USC maybe got called for that at Utah once. But other than that, I don't think I remember anybody ever getting called for it against USC. But yeah, that happened. They talked about it, and the officials did nothing about it. No question.
Okay, Alan called in, and his voicemail was too long. So sorry, Alan, we're not going to be able to play it. But the general gist of what he was saying was, he's from St. Louis, by the way. He said he was reading things everywhere that's saying this is really about bad coaching. Do you think that's rhetoric? And he thinks it's bad coaching. But he wants to know, am I being an unreasonable fan, or is coaching really this bad?
They had coaching for USC?
Yeah. Is the USC struggles? Do you think it's a lot of have to do with coaching? He says that everywhere he reads, it's all about coaching, 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 not really about the players.
Well,
is that rhetoric?
Yeah,
or
I think over the years, they've made a couple of really bad choices, and I don't think there's any question. I mean, when you get better coaching out of the two interim coaches than the two guys that you hired, yeah, USC made, you know, two really bad decisions about head coaches, that two guys that really weren't ready or weren't ever going to be ready and had the kind of issues that weren't going to allow them to ever be successful at USC. And so I think it starts there. And obviously when, you know, in what, the last 4 years, you've had to fire two coaches in the middle of the season, it's probably significantly about bad coaching. I don't think there's any question. Now, you know, where it is right now, I would say this, obviously the second half of 2011, they had really good coaching because they let basically, I think, Rhett Ellison and Matt Khalil and those guys coached the team and said, just follow us. and that team was awfully good. And Lane didn't get in the way. And then, basically when Ed took over, I think they had, you know, considering all the issues that team had and the few players they had and all of that, that was a well-coached team. That was a good staff. I mean, we could all name those guys, but that was a very good coaching staff. So, you know, if you want to go back over the 5 years and say, was it about coaching? Yeah, a lot of it was about coaching. Is it about coaching right now? And I think Clay's doing the best he can with the people he's got, you know, the staff he's got. And the way everything is broken down this year, I don't think it's impossible to, you know, to pick up the team on, you know, Sunday of Notre Dame week, and all of a sudden, now what do you do? But there are coaching issues, and if you had to say, is it one thing over any other, that would probably be the number one thing, but they still don't have, you know, enough veteran players. They don't have enough veteran leaders, upper class guys and all that kind of thing, not like they, you know, usually would have had. So, you know, they might not have quite the talent differential that you used to see with USC. So it's both of those things, but the coaching would be number one.
All right, let's go to Dave in Glendora. He says, back when Cody Kessler and Max Whittick were competing for the starting quarterback job, I heard multiple times on your podcast about how athletic Cody Kessler was. It was stated several times that he could dunk a basketball when he was a sophomore in high school. I think it was actually in eighth grade. These comments were made in the context that he would be bringing athleticism and mobility to the quarterback position. Over the time that Cody has been the starter, we have not seen this very much, especially this season. Obviously, to make these statements, you'd have seen something in practice that would, you know, back up your comments. My question is, what happened to Cody? On top of it, it's my opinion, he has regressed this season and tends to make very questionable decisions, especially by a veteran senior quarterback. It's like his confidence is shot. I'm not bashing Cody, but I'm curious to hear your opinion on why things went in the wrong direction. Is it that the poor guy had so many coaching changes during his time at SC? Dave from Glendora, California.
You know, I mean, I don't think there's any question that Cody looks a little slowed down. I mean, not only could he dunk a basketball in the eighth grade, as Ryan said, but he averaged 29 points a game with, like, you know, 10 rebounds and 5 assists, some ridiculous number, as a junior. Didn't play as a senior, concentrated on football. I mean, I think some of it is physical. Some of it is just the way you observe him. I mean, I actually have talked to him about, he wears linebacker shoes, okay? He doesn't wear the shoes that the backs and the wide receivers wear. He wraps his ankles, so it looks like he's wearing high tops. So this is probably a reference, you know, that, you know, you guys won't all pick up on, but he looks like Johnny Unitas out there. And he moves he doesn't move the way he used to move. I don't know why exactly. He's very careful. He's very cautious. He doesn't do crazy stuff. when people say he makes bad decisions, as Clay, we tried to talk to Clay Sunday night about the throwing the ball 5 yards when you needed, you know, 7 or 8 on third down. And he says that's what they teach him to do. And if the linebackers drop, they throw the ball underneath and hope something happens, like hope one of the linebackers has a heart attack or something, I guess.
That was the most disturbing part of that Sunday night conference, Dan. Like, to him, especially when you see it happen against Stanford, when you're down 10 and you got to score quickly, it doesn't matter if they drop an extra guy into coverage. You can't dump it off underneath. And for what Clay Helton's saying, that's what they teach him to do. I don't know why you even have those kind of patterns in the design there. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, what's the point of having, you know, an outlet if that's not going to do you any good at all?
Yeah.
I mean, there is no point in having one of those guys there. You know, run them all down the field. Maybe one of the defenders falls down. But, yeah, it was something. I mean, you just have to, you know, run picks and run crossing routes and just do, I mean, it's very frustrating. Yeah, when Oregon's got, you know, 6 touchdown passes, the shortest, which was 21 yards and 26 yards and 30, you know, 6 yards and 48 yards and 50 whatever yard, and USC's just struggling to, you know, dink and dunk. And so they'll score on a, you know, 50-some yard, you know, touchdown pass, and then here comes USC, and they go out and throw a 3-yarder and a 4-yarder and a 2-yarder or whatever, and it's like, come on. But the attack has definitely gone, you know, like Lane and like Sark, where it's basically to the sidelines and short. And that's what they do. And, you know, and I know people can say, well, Cody has made, you know, bad decisions. And you think, what other decision is there to make? You can't throw the ball to somebody who's not there. You can't complete a pattern that you didn't run. And I don't disagree with the fact that I don't, Juju's not 100% now. Steven Mitchell's not 100%. I mean, I think Deontay Burnett is. I just find guys who are 100% and run them down the field. But I think, and I think part of the problem is, okay, they don't, they keep the tight end in because they gotta have him to block, because they don't trust the offensive line. That's a problem. They don't, you know, they don't run the ball consistently well enough. As much better as they are running the ball, they don't run it consistently well enough to make the play action pass such a threat. So teams essentially just say, we're going to stop the run, and we don't think you're going to take advantage of us throwing the ball deep, and USC won't. And they took, you know, a couple of shots, and it was like, wow, they took a couple of shots. Well, so take more. But they, I won't put that on Cody. I mean, I really won't. I do think I'm not seeing the same arm strength that I did. And this is something nobody will talk about. Nobody's ever going to admit to. I'm not sure if there's not some issue there. He does at times look more like he's flipping the ball. Than really just getting on top of it and drilling it. But, he doesn't quite look like the same player.
All right. Let's see. Let's go to Stephen Poway. He said, I know it might seem trivial to discuss this issue during the week of a devastating loss to Oregon, but one thing, from last Saturday's game did provide was a window onto Matt Boromeister's kicking ability. So, does USC have a kicker on the roster who can kick the ball off out of the opponent's end zone instead of to the 20 or 10 yard line? I know Oregon does, but do we? Stephen Poway.
Again, this is what you talk about, player development. One of the things we were very impressed with a year ago was what a big leg Matt Boromeister had. And now, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, the first kickoff, I think, went to, you know, barely past the 20. You know, I thought there was an accuracy issue with the field goals, but I was, to say the least, a little shocked that it looked like, that it just dropped off. I mean, it's just that distance and that ability to kick the ball through the end zone. And I guess it's no surprise when I was looking at the Pac-12, he had the nominees for the different positions. And there's through 10, like the all century team, and through 10 positions, including kicker, USC has zero of the 10. Now, USC has 7 of the 10 greatest running backs in the Pac-12 history, and 4 of the best 10 wide receivers, and 5 of the best 10 safeties, and 4 of the best 10 return guys, and 5 of the best 10 linebackers. That's in the whole league. So USC has 5 linebackers who are considered the top 10, and the whole rest of the league, in the whole history of the league, has 5. But when it comes to kickers, USC has 0 of 10. So the 10 greatest kickers in the Pac-12, none of them are from USC. Punters, USC has 1. Our boy Tom Malone, who was by far the best punter I've ever seen in college football before he hurt himself, unfortunately, when he was a sophomore, and averaged almost 50 yards a punt. But they didn't ever hit the punt the ball, so he didn't win the championship. He was the best punter in the country by far. But why it is that USC has not hit a kicker, I can't even begin to tell you that. That they've never been. I mean, it's not like they're not investing scholarships. They have 2 scholarship kickers right now and 2 scholarship punters.
Yeah.
You ought to, out of 4 scholarship guys, you probably ought to be able to get somebody that can kick it into the end zone, or somebody that can, you know, you don't have to just bounce it away from people. But so far, they've not had any luck that, you know, we can remember.
We got a question from
other than Tommy Malone.
Tommy Malone, yeah. Question from Tana. I'm so happy Cal Los Angeles won and really proud of Justin Davis. He has surprised me this season. I call our running back group Earth, Wind, and Fire. Trey Madden brings the big bruiser Earth. Justin Davis brings the swift wind, and Ronald Jones being the electric runner Fire. Anyways, so that was kind of interesting intro. Anyways, who has surprised you the most this season besides any of the freshmen? From Tana. Anyone surprised you the most?
Are we limiting it to just the running backs?
No,
or
no,
everybody.
Yeah, I think there was like an intro on running backs, but then, you know, anyone that would surprise you, because
anyone that surprised me. Huh? That's a really good question. I mean, we do see them enough. The positive surprises aren't, you know, other than the freshmen who you really don't know enough about until you actually see them play. As far as after that, I don't think so. I don't think there have been any of those kinds of surprises. There maybe have been some surprises in the direction you don't want them to be, you know, surprising you. But as far as the positive surprises, I don't think there have been that surprise. I don't know. Can you think of any, Ryan?
You know, like, I think Delvon Sivens was a little, you know, he's come on lately. That's been kind of a positive, you know, and.
But I mean, I think with Delvon, we expected him to be that player.
Yeah.
Last year, he wasn't that player, and he didn't start out as that player this year, but now he's kind of become that player.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that. But the surprise element is only because he wasn't there, like he thought he might be, and now he is.
Yeah. It's tough. Like, I mean, I think some of the freshmen are, that's the obvious ones, but without.
Yeah, the freshmen, you got Cam Smith and Ronald Jones, and whenever he gets a chance, a guy like Deontay, you know.
Burnett.
I mean, I'm trying to think, I think Marvell Tell at times. I think the freshmen have been where the surprises are.
For sure.
Upperclassmen, wow.
Yeah, not as much.
No, I don't think, I mean, and Justin is a good, I mean, he's gotten a chance, but I don't think there are any of us who didn't think he could do what he's doing. I don't think so. I think we all thought the guy you saw is the guy that he could be. And he certainly, I think, has always, you know, felt that he could be that guy.
Let's go to Jarrett. He said, there are extraordinary athletes all over the practice field at USC. My question is, regards to specifically the defensive front 7, who to you guys are the most physically imposing ooh and ah athletes you see practicing? So in the defensive front 7, Dan, this is from Jarrett, And you know, I don't think there's a lot. Like, there's not like the, you know, Robert Kendiche guy kind of guys like that. You just, especially the rush ends, you know, the guys that just rush the quarterback. That's where I think USC's kind of lacking as far as like just specimen athletes rushing the quarterback. But what do you think?
Yeah, and they don't get turned loose either. So you really don't maybe see them. I mean, every once in a while you'll see Kenny Bigelow and you say, wow, where did that come from? Or Delwan, every once in a while. But it's not something that you just consistently see. That's just not how, you know, they see their defense. So you don't see those guys turn loose, all that much. You know, physically, I mean, this is one of the really, I think, the biggest negatives of the 5 years, you know, the sanctions and all that, is they decided maybe for self-preservation reasons and when you're going with, you know, that many fewer scholarship players, that they were not able to be, you know, necessarily a physically imposing team. And USC has gone away from being, you know, the big bullies of the Pac-12 or Pac-10. And I think they've got to get back to that. That's what you hope with the way this coaching thing works out, is that you get a coach who's committed to doing what it is that USC has done over the years and doesn't go away. I mean, I thought, you know, it was kind of a con man approach to we'll do what, you know, Sark wants to do on offense, and we'll go this direction, and that's the modern thing. Let's go, USC can be USC. Alabama can be Alabama. I mean, they're, you know, if Alabama had a good quarterback, you know, they can do whatever they want. And, you know, but if you're in the Pac-12 and you're USC, you can have a good quarterback. And, you know, they just have to, I think, be USC. And a big part of that being USC is you are physically, you know, you physically impose your will. They've had, you know, powerful, you know, defensive linemen and powerful safeties and linebackers and people that really get after people. And that went away with when you hire two young offensive coordinators who don't understand what football is all about, don't understand how the game is played, at least certainly how it should be played by USC. That's what you end up with. You end up with teams that, you know, are much more worried about the X's and O's than, you know, playing really physical football and dominating people, you know, the way USC did for, you know, years and years and years. And they've got to get back to that.
Here's a voicemail question for you, Dan.
This is Richard from Toluca Lake. I asked a question last week that didn't get answered, so I'm going to ask it again for Dan Weber. Max Brown has been in the system for 3 years. He's played under four coaches. Outside of handing off meaningless handoffs in games that don't matter, he's never been in any game circumstances where it actually matters. My question is, how do you get him ready for the Alabama game next year, and do you think he will be ready? And you see the quarterback of the future. Enjoy the program. Thanks very much, and fight on.
Yeah, I think he's ready. I think he'd be ready for UCLA this week if he had to be. I mean, I don't think there's any question. Watching him in practice, he's ready. And it's a shame that the way this season's gone, that he hasn't gotten that chance. I don't know that that's a deal breaker that you if you haven't played, you can't play. He can play. I very well remember the USC opens at Auburn when Matt Leinart, you know, got his first start. And, you know, I think the first pass he threw for a touchdown. And that was an Auburn team that had, you know, a ton of NFL players, and some people thought they were the best team in the country. And didn't seem to bother them. So, you know, I think they've got a pretty good chance to, you know, to come out and play really well, you know, with Max Brown, if that's the way they go in terms of, you know, who the coach is, who the new coach is. I think he's absolutely ready. And I think he could do some really good things. I mean, he throws a deep ball that is just terrific, and we see that all the time.
Yeah.
He throws it effortlessly, and he's very confident and very comfortable, and they're very confident and comfortable with him doing that. So, yeah, I think they're fine. I think that's probably a worry that need not be a worry.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get him some reps, but yeah, that obviously that hasn't happened, but he does look ready. So, okay. We got a weird, like obscure one, and we have two coaching ones. So I'll do the coaching one first and we'll finish off with the weird one. Mike in Santa Barbara, after the loss to Oregon, the spotlight is certainly dimmed for Clay Helton to become USC's next head coach. However, he has certainly demonstrated that he has talent as a coach and the players will fight for him. The loss to Oregon aside, the team came back from deficits to win its previous two games, which is something unheard of under the last two coaches. My question is twofold. If USC does bring in a big-time head coach, is there a place on staff for Clay Helton in the same way that Coach Orgeron was offered the assistant head coaching position? And will Clay Helton be open to that role if offered? Thanks, Ryan, and fight on, Mike in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, Mike, I think that's a really good point, especially if, you know, it turns out, let's say, that it's an NFL guy. And, you know, you really do need somebody there as the transition guy, as the, you know, carryover guy, maybe as the assistant head coach, associate head coach, whatever you want to call it, with a nice bump in salary as a reward, you know, for jumping in there for the second time the way Clay has done it. Yeah, I think absolutely there would be a role. If you do go ahead and, you know, name somebody else, you would think chances are it's going to be before the bowl game. And, with the thought that you'd really want that kind of continuity and not what happened. I mean, I would think they're absolutely going to try to avoid at all costs what happened last time when I guess there was, you know, kind of a mini riot when Pat told the team what was going to happen and it wasn't going to be Ed and all of that. And you want to avoid that. I would think that would be actually a good chance that would happen. Now, whether Clay is in a position, if, say, the Memphis job opens up, is he, you know, here's what we don't know. As much as we're trying to make these decisions, USC could lose this week, and they could end up in the Las Vegas Bowl, you know, whatever. Six, they could end up with the number six bowl spot in the Pac-12. They could win this weekend, and, you know, 6 days later, they could, you know, upset Stanford and end up in the Rose Bowl. I mean, think about how different Clay Helton's future will be, even though people say, oh, it can't be based on this game or that game. It will be. And, you know, he could end up going to the Rose Bowl, end up winning the Rose Bowl. You know, based on the Oregon game, that ain't going to happen. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, they're the favorite against UCLA this weekend. So, you know, it's not like people think that's just crazy talk. But I think, again, we may be ahead of ourselves. But I think without a doubt that's a possibility, that he would be the holdover guy, and that, you know, with somebody like T. Martin. And they, you know, they would be the people that are trying to keep the program you know, going until you get the new guys in here.
All right. Mitch in LA had a question. He said, this is for Dan. Up until today, I would have put this in the pipe dream category, but I'm really starting to think that the next USC head coach is going to be John Gruden. It's not because of his Super Bowl pedigree or that he will instantly be considered one of the best recruiters by his name alone in the history of college football. It's because in the next 12 months or so, USC is going to have to do the next to impossible, and that is try to convince donors to pay huge PSLs, personal seat licenses, to help fund the revamping of the Coliseum. When the PSL push starts, it's going to cause mass Cardinal and Gold booster and longtime season ticket holder cancellations, the like that has never been seen before, never happened before. What could possibly stem that from happening? Chucky roaming the sidelines in Cardinal and Gold. What do you think, Mitch in L.A.?
I guess, I don't know, I'm one of those people who thinks you'd have to probably practice with Chucky on the sidelines. It's been so long since he's been on the sidelines. You know, I know we're talking about recruiting. When was the last time he recruited anybody to do anything? I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, I know we can come up with these names, but what is there in his most recent, you know, part of his life that translates in any way to running the USC football program? I'm not sure there's any part of it that, that does. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, there are people that you could say, wow, this guy would have an immediate impact on the fundraising. And again, we don't know. I mean, clearly, there have been some big names who made phone calls to USC, or their agents have. And clearly, those conversations are going on. And clearly, the impact on, you know, fundraising for the Coliseum is a major factor. And if I were, you know, Pat Hayden, and that was going to be my responsibility, I'd want that too. Whether, you know, Chucky is the right guy to do that. I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, how many years does he have left on his ESPN contract? He probably will be the last guy with a giant, you know, ESPN contract. But if he's got three or four more years, like, you know, we're the most recently we've been hearing that, I can't imagine you'd want to leave that and go to an uncertain future. I mean, was he ever a big time college coach? I don't think so. You know, I think his dad might have coached at, you know, Dayton, places like that, and he knows what it's like. He's been around it. But, you know, the idea that you would jump into that, having been so removed from it for so many years, would be, I just think that that's not what you need.
All right, we got one last one. This is a little weird one from David. We haven't heard this for a while, but it used to be a common question. He says, hello, Ryan. Love the show. Keep up the hard work and the information you guys provide. My question is for Dan. So he said hello to me, but the question's for you, Dan, so I'm not sure what that means. But he said, any status on Bryce Dixon, and will he be able to rejoin the team next season? Love the show. Fight on, from David.
I think, you know, we're hearing that he's doing well in class, that he is a good student, and he's hanging in there. I mean, he could have gone, maybe gone somewhere else and, you know, been set to go somewhere else. Now, he's stuck at USC. So now, if he can't play at USC next year, he's going to miss another year. And that's really difficult. So, or at least if he's going to go FCS level, or excuse me, FBS level. But it wouldn't surprise me that after a year, the process gets started where they say, look, we know that this was a railroad job, and we know it. We gave in to the federal government. This is, they've said basically that you're supposed to railroad all these guys that are in these situations. And so after a year, okay, we railroaded you. Now we'll let you come back. My guess is that's what might happen. Even USC, with the politically correct environment and all of that, finally says it probably shouldn't be a lifetime sentence. As badly as the process was handled, as unfair as that process was, you know, we'll back off and say, and if anybody comes after us and say, hey, we took a year out of this kid's life, and even though we had no idea whether he did anything wrong, and we had no proof that he did anything wrong, and the process that, you know, determined that he may have done something that we think may have been wrong, we took a year out of his life so he can come back now. That would be my guess as to how this plays out. The fact that he's still there makes me think that's a real possibility.
All right. Well, we knew you'd have a good update for that one. So it's a kind of obscure one, but thanks for all the questions and everything, and thanks, Dan, for sharing your insights. I thought it'd be really interesting with Rivalry Week, and just to let people know, we're going to do a Pac-12 podcast live at Barney's Beanery on Tuesday. So this is where this is going to drop Tuesday morning. So you might not hear this in time, but if you're around and you're in the Westwood area, Barney's, I don't know if it's Barney's Beanery or just Barney's. But Barney's in Westwood, we're going to do a little, at 4:30 to 7 p.m., we'll do our Pac-12 podcast show. So that should be
going into enemy territory, eh?
Yeah, we're doing enemy territory. You know, people ask, like, well, why aren't
you? Well, I understand UCLA people don't want to come anywhere near USC, right?
Yeah, we figured there's USC people in Westwood.
They're so afraid of, you know, all of that. So, You have to go there.
But we'll try to do, we're going to try to do some more of these. I don't know. No one might show up, Dan. We have no idea. It's, when you do it for a specific school, like we do USC stuff, we get a lot of people to come. This is more kind of a general Pac-12 thing. So I'm curious to see if people show up for it. But yeah, if you're around, come by. You go to Pac-12podcast.com for more details on that too.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thanks again. I just wanted to kind of throw that last part in there. And thanks everyone for listening to the Peristyle podcast. We really enjoy that you come on and send us all the feedback. It's been great. And then stay tuned for a quick message from Michael Moline Real Estate.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, Real Estate.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.